Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Sarah is a small business attorney. She's the principal in Calvert & Associates PC, a law firm that she founded in 1991 in Fairfax, Virginia. She's a member of our Brain Trust, and she's been joining us for the last several weeks to spend some time talking to us about the law and your small business, about how to avoid liability in your small business. And Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
It's good to have you back with us.
Yeah.
I think we are working on what would be number 85 out of
85 101. Out of 101.
That's right. And this one is, do you use an attorney to read and or negotiate important high-dollar contracts? No problem with crash commercialism.
No. I hate to really start with a nice self-serving one, but here's the bottom line on some things. You can be penny wise and pound foolish when you're using professional services. This is a particular one that I see a lot of for my clients who go into things like franchise agreements. I know you talk a lot with franchise people, Jim. Go into something as important as a franchise agreement. You've usually got anywhere from a 20 to 100 page contract on top of 1 to 300 pages of disclosure material.
Right.
And people walk in the door, receive the document, take it home for the required federal 10 days, never read it, sign it, go back and pay somebody a lot of money. And they don't know what they've just done. They are not quite certain exactly what
they're
doing. They're so excited
because I'm going to have my own business. I'll have my own McDonald's or
I know.
Whatever.
I hope you're a multimillionaire if you got your own McDonald's. but it is true that you can get very carried away by, frankly, the sales presentation. Franchises are out there to sell. That is their goal.
And by this time, this is the company you want to do business with, and there's two things that are in your mind.
I know you've searched and searched, Jim. I know you've really done your research.
Here's the two things. Mm-hmm. The two things are the people that I'm dealing with, I obviously like them a lot, or I wouldn't
Absolutely.
Be holding their contract in my hand.
Absolutely.
So they're my friends. They wouldn't do anything wrong. They
no.
wouldn't do anything to hurt me.
No, they wouldn't.
And number two, I don't want anybody to bust my bubble.
Well, and that's
because I have decided that this is what I'm going to do, and that attorney is just going to tell me all the negative things about this and try to talk me out of it.
Well, let me tell you the role of an attorney.
That's the thought process.
Yeah, that, I know. So, Jim, you're in my office, and you've told me this is a great deal, and I want to go forward with it. Just check it over for me, Sarah.
Right. Yeah, I'll be back in a minute.
Yeah, I'll be back. You read all 500 pages and get back to me.
Yeah, I'm going to get a drink of water.
Let me tell you how the process of an attorney works. First of all, you pay me to be paranoid. I am your paranoid conscience, all right? I am going to tell you all of the things that could go wrong because I want you to go into this knowing not just that these are your friends, but that these are your friends, but they're not the owners of the franchise.
Let's keep them your friends.
Right, let's keep them your friends. These may be your friends, but they may have filed bankruptcy with 5 other franchises, and it's disclosed in the documents. These may be your friends, but they may be being sued by 1/3 of their franchisees for doing illegal, immoral, or fattening acts.
Right.
These are your friends, but this may be a deal that you cannot live with once you know all of the implications.
Mm-hmm.
And once you understand, I see a lot, especially in franchise agreements, I see a lot of entrepreneurs, true entrepreneurs, people who would start a business at the drop of a hat, who love business, who are ready to get into business. And frankly, a franchise opportunity is really not for that type of entrepreneurial person.
Right.
It is more for a person who has never been in business, has no clue where to start, and really wants a turnkey package.
And is prepared to follow instructions.
Exactly.
And
if you're an entrepreneur wants to go in your direction and think this is really cool, and wait a minute, I want to go over here too, you're going to be very unhappy with the restrictions of a franchise.
Right. That's right.
So that's one type. The other that I see a lot is leases. People come to me all the time and say, I signed this lease. Do you see anything wrong with it?
Well, let me back up.
That's the wrong time.
Let me back up for a second. Back on franchise for a second.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
There's probably all kinds of language in those franchise agreements that says, this is the way you will do it.
Absolutely.
If you don't do it this way, we will have these remedies.
Well, there's two things going up against each other. First is the franchisor who believes that he or she or they have a wonderful product and they want it to be identical in every single
entity.
That's
what a franchise is.
That's right. And they want it.
You will fold the paper around the hamburger this way.
And that is not funny. That is absolutely true. Your office, if you're in a retail or a service one, your office will look identical. You know, the filing cabinet will be over here, and it will be green, and you will have this kind of plant. It will be silk plants and not real plants.
As I've said before, if you just before you board a plane in New York, you buy a McDonald's hamburger at the airport, and then you get off the plane in Los Angeles 4 hours later, and you buy a hamburger at the airport. It'll be the same hamburger,
and
that's their plan,
and what the franchisee must enforce.
That's right, and you will not change that if that's what that franchisor has decided to do, and they've got all kinds of things in their contract that will prevent you from violating that.
And that is probably the most irritating thing for somebody who is truly an entrepreneur and really wants to explore and grow and change.
Right.
That's just not a terrific opportunity, and you need to understand what you're getting yourself in for, because there are tremendous legal implications. The most effective way of getting out of a a franchise contract is to file bankruptcy.
Well,
and that's a horrible thing.
And here's back to the contract thing. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I used to do is I used to teach CPAs and tax attorneys how to read private placement investment memorandums.
Mm-hmm. Oh my
and
goodness.
those things are cures for insomnia.
Yes.
But I learned how to read them, and I learned how to find the really bad stuff. I wasn't a contract attorney at all, but mm-hmm. but I just knew where to find the ugly stuff.
That's what you do. If your attorney's not teaching you as they're showing you, I usually say most of my clients will bring me the first three or four big contracts that they're asked to sign.
Mm-hmm.
And once they do that, they see what I'm looking for. I'm looking for how they get into it, how they get out of it. I'm looking for the detail of what everybody's obligating themselves for. I'm looking for collections language to make sure everybody gets paid on time.
But the places that you're looking for, though, see, if a layman is reading a contract or all these disclosure documents, they're looking for bullets. They're looking for bold things.
Yes.
And the devil is in the details, folks.
Ooh, yeah.
in those paragraphs that you absolutely will not read.
And it's nothing to do with intellect or whatever. It's years of me reading the same type of contract, mm-hmm. and knowing,
yes,
where they hit it.
Insidious little language,
yes,
that might not be clear to you what it means.
Absolutely.
And you just kind of gloss over it because you're so excited. Don't forget, let your attorney read those contracts. We'll be right back, folks. It's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Sarah Calvert is our special guest. Stay with us. All right, we are back. It's 24 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. If you'd like to ask me or our special guest and our good friend Sarah Calvert a question, my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Sarah, you have a website.
I have a website. It's www.calvert, C-A-L-V-E-R-T, and associates, all spelled out, .com.
And Sarah is our resident small business attorney, and we're talking about some ways to avoid liability in your small business. Specifically right now, the issue at the moment is make sure your attorney reads any important contracts, especially, she says, high-dollar contracts, but I'm going to say any important contracts because
that's
it might
true,
not be that high-dollar. There might be some insidious contingent liability language in there, something like that. But you were going to talk about leases, and I interrupted you to finish up a thought on franchises. Talk to us about leases.
Well, when I can't sleep at night, I pull out a commercial lease, which is usually one of the most horrible things. For some reason, franchise documents are interesting because I'm always looking for those, nasty guys in there to reveal themselves. But in a lease, they're almost always very, very similar. It's just a matter of degree, and it's a very subtle thing to tell you. I can tell you by reading this lease what kind of landlord you're going to have, because I've spent that many years just negotiating landlord
right.
disputes and negotiating with tenants. And you can tell by the way, if somebody has made an attempt to have a fairly fair agreement, has put a lot of the clauses in there that say the landlord can do anything, but the landlord's going to be reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I can just tell by the flavor of the lease
mm-hmm.
that what is going to, what your future with that piece of property is going to be. And that's the kind of thing that a commercial real estate agent is going to be standing at your side saying, sign this lease, and then the commercial real estate agent gets paid. This is the one time when you really want to have a professional on your side, because frankly, the commercial guy gets paid by the landlord, not by you.
Right. There are a lot of excuse me, there are a lot of little landmines.
Mm-hmm. There's there's all kinds of things in there. There's all kinds of extra fees they're going to throw at you. You know, I go reading along.
For what?
You know, I go reading along through a very moderate lease, and all of a sudden they'll say, and as part of the CAM charges, we're going to give you you're going to pay an extra 25% administrative fee.
You know,
thinking 25%, that's outrageous.
You know, the truth is that a commercial real estate lease really can be written, in my opinion, if it's a straightforward, honest lease, someone who's trying to deal in good faith, a layperson ought to be able to read that contract. And so, to me, if absolutely, folks, if you've got something in there that you don't understand, then you definitely need to get somebody to help you. Would you agree? I'm not saying that they should read it and sign it without an attorney. I'm just saying
they should read it.
It can be written so that a layperson could understand everything first pass.
Yes, there are a lot of big block issues that are difficult to parse through, such as the hazardous waste material sections and some of the condemnation sections. But you should be able to understand what your obligations are out of that, and it should be fairly clearly outlined. There are some good leases out there that I've seen, you know, commercially that many different landlords use that are what I would call plain English and really are a boon to the relationship between the landlord and the tenant. And it basically says, you know, the landlord will do this, and you, the tenant, will do this, and here's how much everything costs, and here's all of our protections.
Yeah.
You know? It shouldn't be that hard, but it is. It's usually much harder than that.
Unless you're talking about a major anchor in a major mall or something like
that. Well, and we're not talking to those.
Yeah,
we're not talking to Sears. We're talking to Joe Hardware Store.
Exactly. If you're talking about a lease that most small business owners would enter into, would you agree with me, Sarah, that you ought to be able to put a lease like that on 2 or 3 legal pages max?
Well, I would say that most of the small-time landlords at some point had a lease like that. In my area, I just don't see it. I mean, I think it would be terrific if they could. I mean, as a goal, yes, but as a reality, when I see those, I know I'm talking to a one-man operation for a landlord, and I know that we're talking about a personality deal and not a business deal.
Yeah.
That the landlord likes you and you like the landlord, which is actually, I mean, I think it's a wonderful place to be if you've got that. But most of our malls in this area are controlled by large partnerships, trust funds, unions that are, you know, that
right.
have invested.
REITs. Stand by, Sarah. We got to take a break. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about how to resolve complaints with your clients. It's 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, 888-822-8255. We'll be right back with Sarah Calvert. We're back. It's 33 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. You're listening to the show that is dedicated to providing small business owners with the maximum opportunity to be successful in your small business. And our Sarah Calvert is our special guest and our good friend. She's our resident small business attorney, and we're talking about how to avoid liability in your small business. And one of the things that's next up on the list, Sarah, is do you respond immediately to resolve complaints from clients?
You know, there's a couple of these 101 ways, Jim, that I can say are the most frequently seen in my office, and this is probably one of the top 5.
Really?
Reasons that people come into my office, and that is because they have a client, and it's been sitting on the back burner, and they know there's a problem. They know there's a green widget when there should be a blue widget. They know that there's a couple of hours of billing that needs to be adjusted. That person has just been sitting on the back burner because they know there's a problem, or either they made a mistake or the client thinks they made a mistake.
Now, is this the professional or the client that's coming in?
This is the professional. This is the business owner that's coming in,
yep.
Knowing that they've got some sort of minor problem that's been sitting on the back
with
burner.
With a customer.
With a customer, and inevitably that person sues because they feel like they've not been paid attention to.
Yep.
They may be in small claims court. We're not talking high dollar. This is the most often the smallest cases I see. We may be talking about $100. But these kinds of things bubble up, and then they become lawsuits, and then we're talking about a whole lot more money. Mm. So if I could tell you a way to avoid coming into my office, that is to make a sweep of all the things on your back burner, at least on a regular periodic basis. So
just
that you don't, don't let these people, just close your eyes and jump into it and do whatever has to be done to make it right.
Well, you know, the thing that my customer service, customer care, customer loyalty experts would say is, you know, that's bad business. I mean,
to solve the customer complaints.
Yeah, if we're talking about something that, as you say, is typically not that much money that we're talking about here,
mm-hmm.
unless the customer or the client is just being totally unreasonable, you know, turn that situation into a positive. Turn it into an opportunity to develop customer loyalty with that person.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, in my office, just from my experience, if a client has a question about a bill, we automatically credit whatever the question is.
Yeah.
And there's no questions asked on my part. And I've never had somebody take advantage of this, and I don't think I would, because my policy has always been, you know, if you said the meeting was 45 minutes and I said it was 50, terrific,
right.
It's 45.
Right.
You know, it's just not worth losing a client over. It's not worth being involved in a lawsuit over. It's not worth my time and effort to go further than to make the client happy. If the client's happy, then we go on.
In over 10 years of billing clients for my consulting time,
mm-hmm.
I've only had one person to ever say anything about that, and I did exactly what you did. I said, what do you think it ought to be? He mm-hmm. said what he thought. I said, that's what it is.
Yep, that's exactly. I've probably done that 5 or 6 times in my business.
Now, obviously, we're not talking about some major reduction or anything.
No, we're talking about
minor disagreements.
The client has a complaint, you know, of some sort. You know, I needed this in this format, or I needed
right.
to have this done in a different way, or you misunderstood me, and I needed to have this kind of agreement. Hey, mistakes happen in business. It's when you're afraid to face the fact that there may have been an error on your part, or there may have been a miscommunication between you and the client. It's when you avoid that situation that it becomes a blister and then a lawsuit.
Absolutely.
And people are so much more aggravated. The general populace is more aggravated over the $100 matters than they are over multi-million-dollar matters.
Well, let me give you an example of something that we did recently. We sold, one of my companies sold someone something that we install for our customers, but this person wanted another person to install this material.
Mm-hmm.
So we sold them the material and delivered it, and the other person installed it. And however, for some reason, the factory, when we ordered all the material and everything, the factory didn't include some of the parts. And so the installer wasn't able to finish the job because he didn't have all the parts, and it was our fault, really, even though it wasn't, but it was because we were responsible for getting the materials there. They didn't have all the parts, and so that installer wasn't able to finish the job, and he went away. Now, I found out about it, and I called the customer, and I said, my men will install those parts when they come there to deliver them. I'm not going to have you have cause your guy to come back, and you possibly have to pay him to come back because we didn't deliver something when we should have. My men will install that.
And that's
you know what she said? She said, I will sing your praises all over town. That's what she said.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, that's number one, good customer service. But number two, from a legal perspective, from avoiding liability perspective, she's not sitting around thinking you're a terrible person and that, gee, I'm going to go to court, and even though it's only $63 worth of materials, you know, my time and attention and all this, you know, she is not an unhappy person that would potentially become a lawsuit.
The entire project, labor and material, might have been $105.
Right.
The whole thing. It never got on the back burner.
That's right,
as
yeah.
you say.
And if it had sat on the back burner and she'd sat around, you know, one of her neighbors would have said, you know, that's really, you know, this guy cost you a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort, and that's,
right.
that's how things blossom.
All right, next is, do your contractual terms and conditions allow you an opportunity to fix a mistake or problem before the client is entitled to a refund or a lawsuit? What do you mean by that?
I was going to say, this is similar to what we were just talking about, in that very often you want to have, if you've got a long ongoing project, I'm talking about larger items, or if you are fixing things for people, mechanical things, fixing cars, homes, things like that, give yourself an opportunity to fix those before things become a lawsuit.
Right. Stand by. I've got another question about that I want to ask when we come back. Folks, it's 39 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. If you have a question for Sarah, give us a call, 888-822-8255. Stay with us, please. Welcome back, heroes. It's 44 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you for joining us. Sarah Calvert is our special guest. If you'd like to ask her a question, a legal question about your business, our phone number is 888-822-8255. Sarah, when we left, we were talking about make sure your contractual terms and conditions allow you the opportunity to fix a problem or mistake.
Right.
Are you talking about make sure that your own contract doesn't sort of mess you up?
What I want to make sure is that those of us that have businesses that do things on people's cars, on people's houses, things that are involved in changing, fixing, building, that those, I call them the mechanical trades, that those mechanical trades have something in their contracts that allow them to come back and review a problem. What you'll see most often is that somebody will bring in a car to be painted, and rather than, if they have a complaint, rather than bringing it back to the shop and saying, hey, I think there's a bubble over here, they'll take it to the paint shop down the street, and the paint shop down the street will say, no, it needs to be completely repainted, it's completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want your contracts to say is that if you have a complaint, it must first come back here so we can review it,
right,
and then we will fix it for you.
These are things that when you fix them, they don't always get fixed 100%. For example, if someone puts up a carport cover,
right,
and they do a good job of installing it, but they right. might miss a little place that would cause a leak.
Right. And rather than have another company come out and say, no, it was done completely wrong,
right,
we got to redig the post holes. And,
right.
You know, this contract, your contract will say, if you have a complaint, you know, our warranty is you first come to us.
You give us a chance to fix it.
Give us a chance to fix it first. And this will solve a lot of your problems up front and immediately, as opposed to having people wander out and cost themselves a lot of money, for starters.
Right. All right. Next, do you routinely fire or avoid clients that you know are trouble?
You know, it's interesting, Jim. I have done a research study in my office. My clients don't necessarily know this, but I keep count. When somebody comes into me and finds that somebody's either sued them or that they have to sue them in order to get paid, I ask them, did they know that this client was trouble when they first met this client?
Right.
And 75% of the time, Jim, you know that this is not a good client.
Right.
Your instincts are correct. You know that this client gave you grief from the very beginning.
And so no amount of business they give you is going to be worth it.
Yeah, and so my first statement to you is, if you know that, there is no business in the world that is worth it to deal with a client like that. So you turn that client away, or the fee for that client is twice what it is for anyone else.
A rattlesnake is going to bite you if you
yes.
pick it up.
And you know this. Yeah,
you know it's a rattlesnake. Expect to be bitten.
That's right. And the most positive thing I can tell you is, don't do business with that person. You don't have to do business with that person. And if this is your only income, then you need to be in a different line of work.
There's a contractor in one of my businesses. There's a contractor that no matter how much I'm convinced that he's going to get the big job, that would be a lot of business for us, I will not bid the job with him. Mm-hmm. I will not give him our price. I'll give others our price, but I will not give him our price.
Because it's not worth risking.
Because I know I will wind up in court with him.
Well, that's right. You'll wind up in court, and that is a very expensive proposition. So what I'm telling you, fire those clients that are unbearable to work with. Avoid those clients that come and see you and promise you the world, but you know they're trouble because they're niggling over everything.
Right. All right. What's next?
Researching your client types and client data and routinely eliminating unprofitable and unproductive areas. This is something we have a whole seminar on called How to Grow Your Small Business, but it's a very good tip for avoiding liability as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to do, say, six different types of work in your business, and most of us have a mix of things that we do. We don't do one small thing every day. And you take a look at it and you realize that you don't have the knowledge and the research for one of those areas, and it's not being particularly profitable, eliminate those areas and focus your efforts on the things that you do well, the things that you are equipped to do, the things that you are trained to do, and have the backing and encouragement of everyone around to do. So take a look at the mix of things that you do routinely, and don't just do things because people ask you to do them.
Right.
You know, if you're out building carports, that doesn't mean that you're installing garage doors, too.
Right.
It may be that you don't have the training for that, but somebody asked for it once, and so you got stuck doing it. And this is how my clients get sucked into areas where they really feel uncomfortable because they aren't as competent as they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to be very careful looking at product types that you're servicing, looking at types of services that you provide. I decided long ago that I couldn't be everything to everybody. You know, the general practitioner days, frankly, are over because there is too much information, too much knowledge that people are going to hold us responsible for. So you really, really need to know very well what you do and stick to that. And if you find yourself kind of wandering into other areas, pull back and get back into your main area of focus. And this is not to say don't grow.
Mm-hmm.
This is sometimes the best method of growth is to prune, you know, the outer edges of what you shouldn't be doing, and then focus the efforts, the marketing, and the responsibilities in the areas that you are most productive.
Right. There's an evolution that's going on in the marketplace right now, and there are products that you might be offering that may be evolving into unprofitable.
Absolutely.
Products.
Not only unprofitable, but even dangerous. I mean,
exactly.
There's a lot of things out there. You ask any of my computer guys, and they're going to tell you that they wouldn't touch Y2K with a 10-foot pole,
mm-hmm.
because there's no way to make sure that the things you do today on September 1st are still going to be unchanged and unmonitored and unmoved by December 31st, 1999. So while they would normally routinely check somebody who's a client of theirs to make sure their computer systems are adequate and up to date, as of this time of year, they will not, because it's not profitable.
It's too late.
Dangerous.
There's no way they can fix it between
That's right.
now. Yeah. Stand by, Sarah. Folks, it's 50 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Sarah Calvert as we wrap up the hour. Stay with us, please. All right, we are back. It's 54 after. Thank you very much for joining us today. I appreciate your business. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Sarah Calvert is our special guest, and we're talking about how to avoid liability in your small business. And Sarah, what's next?
Next, I'd like you to check out companies that you're about to do advertising or that you're about to use for services with the Better Business Bureau, then professional associations and the counties in which they are organized.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, the one that comes to mind, and I've seen it probably 10 or 15 times over the last few years, merchant credit card companies that advertise these really, really low rates. You're going to be able to take Visa and MasterCard and American Express, and you're only going to get charged 1% instead of the usual 2 or 3%. I've had a lot of clients pulled in by this. In some cases, it's a scam. And if I had one client who lost $20,000 to one of these companies.
Wow.
Because they signed them up and they took their money and they put it on security hold because they were a new client. And then they kept the money until they shut the company shut down and left town.
He gave them $20,000?
He put $20,000 worth of credit card receipts through.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And then they never deposited them back in my client's bank. And
I'll tell you what, folks, if that doesn't give you a chill.
Oh, and that's not the first, nor will it be the last time that that's happened.
Please check
And
that
what they
out.
Found out was that the Attorney General of the state was investigating, I think
yeah.
they're out of Florida. The Attorney General was investigating them. The Better Business Bureau had scads of complaints about this quote-unquote security hold that they put everybody on. And what it meant was just an excuse to hold the money until they realized they had the most amount of money that they shut down.
Enough to go to the next town.
Exactly. And if they had checked this company out, they would have found out this was not a good company to deal with.
And, you know, a phone call to the Attorney General's office, I've done that before.
Absolutely.
It doesn't take long. You get a quick answer.
Absolutely. If these people are under investigation, you will know it very quickly because they are looking to match complaints up with the investigation. I had a client in my office the other day who had spent a lot of money on some technical training that they felt they hadn't received the benefits of.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to the Attorney General, and I said, it's going to be a hard sell because it's one of these, did you get the services or didn't you get the services?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of in the eye of the beholder. The local Commonwealth attorney, which is our version of a DA, was very interested to hear about it and wanted to get everybody together, and because there were, 15 people in the class, was very interested in going forward with it.
Hmm.
So, don't be afraid to check things out with the local authorities.
Don't you need to be doing that kind of business with a bank?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, that's where to go, isn't it?
Yes.
I
personally believe that, having seen as many clients as I have get scammed by Internet advertisements and things like that, I believe that you should go to your bank because, frankly, there's so much complications. It sounds like a simple business. We take your credit cards, we process them. But if you've got somebody whose throat you can go choke, when your money's sitting out there and never land and it never makes it into your account, it's better to be your bank than some bozo in some unknown Internet land.
Are people gravitate toward those companies because maybe the bank is not, if they're not as, maybe they're not as an established company, and maybe some banks won't take you as a credit card merchant because you're not established?
To an extent. Depends on the type of your type of business. If you've got mostly over-the-phone transactions,
yeah.
if you haven't been in business very long.
Like your home-based business or something like that.
I was going to say, not so much the home-based. Is if you've got either an Internet business or you've got a business that is telephone calls that people call in. If you've got people who just, a retail store or something like that, then you're perfect. perfect for a bank. Also, once you've been in business for a year or two, then usually their problems and concerns go away. They're worried about you cheating your customers, and that's why they're careful.
Absolutely. Sarah, next week.
Okay.
You did a good job today. Thank you very much.
Hey there. Have a good one.
See ya. Sarah Calvert, ladies and gentlemen. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. Sarah Calvert, as I promised.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.